A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Full Chat, the weekly F1 news and discussion show that doesn't care that it's early January and there's been no F1 news to actually discuss. As always, we've done our best to scrape the motorsport barrel for some F1 content, and we hope you'll all join the discussion in our YouTube chat. And remember, any Super Chat questions get a guaranteed answer, but even if you're a cheapskate and you don't pay us money, we'll probably answer you anyway. Joining me, as always, is my co-host and best mate, Alex Van Gien, who always plays football on Wednesday nights, but decided he'd rather record on a Tuesday, so I no longer have to ask the question. Alex, did you win the football?
No. But I will I won't tomorrow, because I'm going to be in Hull eating tapas tomorrow.
Ooh, okay. You're always around travelling at the moment, aren't you? Your job seems to send you far afield.
Yeah, and I'm away next week as well. So luckily, it's part of the reason we've moved it to Tuesdays, because actually none of my away stuff seems to be on Tuesdays. They're always midweek. So that's part of the reason we've moved it to Tuesday night. And it's a little bit less pressure. And I think 9 o'clock is a better time too.
Yeah, so I managed to cook some dinner and kind of sit down ready. We did our little pre-show prep. Everything seemed to work. I don't have any red lights flashing this time. And so, I mean, that's a good start. So before we actually get going, just a quick reminder, if you're joining us on the Twitter space and want to get involved in the chat, head to YouTube. The link's on my Twitter profile, or just search for Brad Philpott on YouTube. So tonight, what are we going to talk about? We're going to give our totally baseless opinions on each F1 driver's prospects for the season ahead. And we're also going to look back at the curious case of Luca Badoa and his 2009 Ferrari F1 chance. And just finally, before we get started, just want to offer my condolences to the motorsport world for the loss of Ken Block. I saw that in my newsfeed this morning, and that was very, very sad. So
it was the first thing I saw when I woke up this morning, and I was gutted. Yep. You know, I'm not a big rally fan, but I've watched a lot of the Jim Carner stuff. Jimmy Carr stuff. I've always enjoyed his appearances on Top Gear. And he's always just seemed like a really nice guy. But he posted a TikTok the other day with him on a snowmobile doing stunts and stuff on a snowmobile. And terrible thing seemed to happen in the winter in snow.
Yeah, I saw a heartbreaking tweet from him from less than 24 hours before that news, where he was, you know, bigging up his daughter's YouTube show. So anyway, condolences to the Block family. And luckily, there's lots of nice videos for us to watch of him doing cool stuff. We've got a question already from Jamie Kowatch in the chat, who says, what's happened with the last two shows? They've been gone by the time I could catch the recording. The last two mystery shows that we will never talk about. So it's no secret that we've had some minor technical glitches the last couple of weeks, but I think we're back to firing all cylinders now. It looks like it's working.
You've thrown enough money at it that it should be fine.
Fingers crossed.
The computer's not screaming at you. That's the important part.
Yeah.
And I have YouTube on next to me on my iPad.
That's one extra viewer.
Good. And it looks good. Okay. Oh yeah, I got to press the like. Oh yeah, we're talking about extra viewers. Everybody press the like button.
Yeah, that always
If
helps.
You're watching, press like.
So shall we start off by actually talking about our first topic? So yes. We're going to try and remember each of the Formula One drivers' names and what team they drive for. And we're just going to tell you what we think they're going to do this year, how well they're going to do. So unfortunately...
Do we start from the bottom or from the top?
Do you mean in terms of last year's team performance? I think Correct. That's probably a good way to go. I was hoping you didn't mean in terms of which drivers you like the least, because that could be very mixed up. Okay, yeah, so let's start from the bottom. So that is obviously going to be Williams.
With Logan Sargeant and Alex Albon.
It was Williams, wasn't it? Haas did outscore.
It was Williams,
right.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so a new driver and a relatively experienced driver. Who do you want to go first? Shall I go first?
I'll go first. I'll start with Albon because I like Alex Albon. I think he seems like a lovely guy. He seems a bit feisty. I mean, I think he'll probably have the better of Logan Sargeant over the course of a season just on experience stakes, unless Logan is, you know, top tier. Because the thing that everyone seems to forget about Alex Albon was shoulder to shoulder with George Russell, with Lando Norris, all the way up to Formula One.
Shoulder, but just slightly behind in terms of performance.
But he was in the same conversations, you know? And, you know, I think he had incredibly difficult first year. Chucked into Toro Rosso, was doing really, really well at Toro Rosso, and then halfway through the season chucked into the full Red Bull team under Max Verstappen for 12 months. And I just think it was such a difficult thing to chuck a young lad like that into the fire pit. And everyone was surprised that he struggled against Max, but then every other teammate since has struggled against Max. So, you know, I believe Albon's a talented driver. I don't know a great deal about Logan Sargeant. What do you know about him, Brad?
Okay, so first of all, I agree with you pretty much on your assessment of Albon. I think we kind of have a handle on his pace now. I don't think he's had the easiest first couple of years in Formula One, and I think he's pretty good. He's like kind of fine, but I'm not a massive Albon fan. Logan Sargeant is one of these drivers that has shown promise and may well have been able to win Formula 2 given an extra season or two. He's kind of been a bit sporadic. He's had some really high highs in Formula 2 and then some weekends where he's kind of just been a bit absent. So he's certainly not someone who has come through the junior ladder and forced his way to the top. Like, it wasn't like Logan Sargeant had to be in Formula 1. I think it helps that he comes with probably quite a bit of funding, but he's not just an out-and-out terrible pay driver. He's a driver who is definitely going to bring some money, but is also pretty good with it. And maybe we haven't had time to see him long enough in the junior series to see whether he could have been champion.
How much of Logan getting the drive is because he's American and obviously the massive drive for F1 in America? Is it a case of, would he have got there on talent if he was nobody from an undisclosed country, or has the American helped?
I don't think it's hurt, but I don't think that's the main thing. I can't claim to know exactly how much budget he's bringing, but chat can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure his family are in the billionaire territory. Maybe I'm wildly out there, but I'm pretty sure I read that. If not, pretty spectacularly wealthy. So that, I mean, most drivers on the way up the ladder are somewhere in that region of wealth at the moment. But I think that probably helped more than the nationality, but the nationality is obviously going to, you know, write a lot of headlines and put a lot of eyeballs on. So hopefully he's going to be really good, and that'll give Albon a run for his money, and that'll give Americans something to cheer for, because I don't think that many Americans are really like behind their team, which is Haas, I guess.
But I think that's got a lot to do with Haas being rubbish at the moment. They haven't been inspiring, apart from every season, the first five races they do really well, and then they just slip further and further back. But we moved it's actually AlphaTauri next. Haas actually beat AlphaTauri. So we'll come back and have a conversation about the Americans when we get to Haas, because Haas is going to be an interesting one next year. But
okay, so AlphaTauri. So we've got our missed Apex Christmas party quiz, what's the right word? Appearance man.
Totally your friend, and you had his number and he did a video for you.
Nick DeVries.
You definitely didn't pay for it on Cameo.
Would you believe Nick DeVries, Formula One driver, is on Cameo? You can just, I mean, I don't know whether he still is, but this was in kind of November.
How long ago did you ask him though?
It was about November. So,
so he was signed?
Within 24 hours, he'd come back with a really nice video. You know, really detailed.
Because I can't imagine anyone knows who he is, so no one would ask him. It's probably a decent way for him to make some extra cash.
I can't see that he can be making that much from it because it wasn't very expensive.
Some of them make a lot of money. I mean, it's like Jay from The Inbetweeners.
Yes.
Was one of the first people to make a proper fortune because what he used to do is because Jay is basically the guy who plays Jay, who I can't remember his name. The guy, he is basically him in real life. So all he used to do was wake up in the morning, be in bed, and just do a whole bunch of cameos from his bed.
Yep.
And just did it all day long. I got paid a bloody fortune for it. I thought it was class. They were all exactly the same, saying all the words that he loves to say in The Inbetweeners, and got paid a fortune for it.
Well, anyway, Nick DeVries, I think he's going to be really good. I know he had the perfect situation for his debut at Williams. Penalties for cars ahead of him. A race where... Why did he end up in the points? Did some cars go out of the race in front? The Williams were certainly...
No, he qualified... because of everything, he qualified ninth and finished ninth, didn't he?
So, but the reason for the qualifying so high was there were definitely some grid penalties for certain drivers.
And I think he just hung in. He had a very... I don't want to say lackluster, but he didn't have a very exciting race.
No, but I mean, just perfect. For a first race.
He probably just kept himself in the wheel tracks of somebody else, stayed in the slipstream... of whoever was around him and just managed to make it work.
So it was obviously the perfect race to be in a Williams. I think it's the race where they could strip off all their draggy, inefficient downforce and just have a pretty bare car. And they knew they
were
going to go
Latifi.
Well there. But Latifi didn't do too badly either.
Pretty certainly was still last.
Probably, but...
I now have to check that, but I'm pretty certain he was still last.
But anyway, De Vries did a mega job that weekend. And
he really did.
Especially going in undercooked. And I mean, and we're going to talk about drivers going in undercooked a little bit later in the show when we do history with Alex and Brad. But I think he will be really solid. He'll have some ups, have some downs, and he'll use his massive experience because, you know, this is a driver who's been around for a while now in multiple series. He's not going to be that fazed by too many things. And I think he'll do really well. And I think on pure pace, Yuki Tsunoda, his teammate, will maybe be faster, outright faster over one lap. I fully expect Nick to finish the season with more points. Is that fair?
I don't know. I still think Yuki's got some pace to come. I think he's learning. He's getting faster and faster. He's getting more consistent. So I think it's going to be a really good battle between those two, where you don't have the out-and-out veteran versus a rookie. So you have a guy with 2 years' experience versus a guy with one race experience and a couple of test sessions and whatever. But so I think it could be good. I think it's going to be really, really close.
So Built to Jez Lexus on the YouTube chat says, Nick is more mature, which means no boneheaded mistakes. And Low Stealth says, crap, I missed the technical difficulties segment. Shut up, Low Stealth. We never have problems.
We don't do technical difficulties.
Not anymore. Nope. Okay, so next...
Shh, don't say it too loudly.
Next up the grid is Haas. So Haas is my... They're my kind of meh team. Like, I don't really pay that much attention. I kind of wanted Mick Schumacher to do well because he just seemed really nice, but now he's gone. And who do we have? It's the old person team now, isn't it? We've got like...
It's K-Mag and Hulk, which is interesting. Because they had the suck my balls moment, where after some sort of altercation on track, Nico comes to have a word with Kevin Magnussen, and K-Mag just goes, suck my balls, which was one of the best memed re-gift things ever.
It's extremely immature, but I found that absolutely hilarious, especially because it was actually a misquote initially. People thought he said, Suck My Balls, Honey. But I think it was actually Mate. I think it was just the accent. You couldn't hear. But
yeah, it was Suck My Balls, Mate.
But Honey is so much more funny because it's just so much more sassy. But anyway, yeah.
I've never heard the thought of it could have been Honey.
Oh, really?
It's always sounded like Mate to
that,
me.
That was the caption at the first few times I saw it when it was a new thing. It said Honey, and I just found that really funny. Anyway, I think they're fine now. They're both a bit older. I'm sure they'll have flare-ups. I think Hülkenberg's in a position where he's just happy to get back in F1 in a race seat, and Magnussen's in a similar position. And they're both, neither of them are up-and-coming new, fresh drivers out there to try and prove a point. They're both drivers who thought their Formula One career was over, and it's not. So they're happy to be there.
Nico is fully intent on increasing his terrible, terrible record of the driver with the most races without a podium.
Can you imagine if he comes back and gets that
first race
with Haas? I mean, Hülkenberg's been an excellent stand-in. He did a great job at Silverstone in the Aston. And what did he drive this year? Was he in the Aston, or was that this year? No, hang on. It was Silverstone in a Racing Point, wasn't it? Was it the year before? Oh my God. Connor Edwards in the chat, or Kyle Power, who's there now, can help us out.
Kyle will know.
We've got some
Kyle knows everything.
We've got some geeks in the chat for sure that can help us. But who's going to come out on top? Hülkenberg or Magnussen?
I think, do you know what? Nico doesn't tend to get in scrapes. Unless he's fighting for a podium, he doesn't tend to get in scrapes. And K-Mag hit everything at the beginning part of the season. It's another one I think will be close, but I actually think Nico might just score more points as long as the car is reliable. But, you know, it's just... Nico will be desperate to do something with that car and for that car to be better. Do we have any indication that the car's going to be better? Have they had more sponsorship? Have they had more
towards
the car? When did they last work on the car?
Yes, so
that kind of stuff, because they often stop development quite early, don't they?
In terms of sponsorship, definitely they have a big new sponsor, and they're going to be at the budget cap, or so we're told.
Who was their new sponsor? I do remember something about this.
It's MoneyGram. Their new sponsor is MoneyGram.
Another one of these NFT Bitcoin people.
I don't think that's what MoneyGram is. I think MoneyGram is an international transfer website, where you can send money abroad, but I might be wrong. Our chat is telling us that this is a combination of all of the geeks we've got today, Connor Edwards, Carl Power, and Bilt Tuja's Lotus. They're saying this year Vettel had COVID, Hülkenberg replaced him for Silverstone. He was in for Silverstone in Germany 2020, and he did one race for Aston this year. So there we go. Thanks, chat. Always helping.
Yeah, MoneyGram, they are money transfers.
If you want to contribute and be a massive geek in our chat and you're listening on the Twitter space, remember to go to the YouTube channel and find us there, and you can see our lovely faces.
If you want two guys who know nothing to steal all your information, come to us.
Connor Edwards saying, international transfer website sounds more dodgy than an NFT.
It does. I have no idea what an NFT is. I've tried really, really hard to understand what an NFT is, and then companies that I like are doing NFTs, and I'm like, I don't know what it is, and I don't care.
Well, maybe we can talk about that on another show.
Let's do an NFT podcast.
What's the next team up the grid from Haas? So we've had Williams, AlphaTauri. God, AlphaTauri were really low, weren't they?
It is Haas. Aston Martin.
Wow.
The dumpster fire that is going to be Aston Martin this year, and I'm going to laugh and laugh and laugh at how things go between Fernando Alonso, Aston Martin, Papa Stroll, and Lance. Because the second something goes wrong, or it seems like they favour Lance in something, which they will do because Daddy runs the team, Alonso's going to lose his shit. And I can't fucking wait.
So I was waiting to go to the guest chat page, so it was just you. I was going to let you have a rant, and I was going to say, so Alex, what do you think about the Aston Martin team in 2023? I know you've got some thoughts, but you already did it, so I don't need to ask you. Yeah, so I know you're a notorious anti Fernando Alonso fan
prick.
I actually I appreciate the negative sides of Alonso. He's said and done some, you know, toxic things. And his
just
fans,
a couple, just his, a few things.
His fan base are certainly among the, or certainly sometimes among the less wholesome when it comes to certain issues. So purely as a driver, did I tread carefully enough there? Purely as a driver, he's my guilty pleasure. I kind of like him.
He's a fantastic driver.
I kind of like the massive confidence.
I mean, I wanted him to come when he came back in, whenever it was. I wanted him to be shit, and I wanted Ocon to absolutely annihilate him and just show that he's now become a hack. But he's not, and he has very much proved he is good enough to be on the grid even at 74 years old.
Oh my god!
But it doesn't take away from the fact that he's a massive douchebag.
He's the only Formula One driver older than you, isn't he? So you should like him.
Oh shit.
Because he's making you still in the Formula One driver age.
He
bracket.
Is, yeah. Because then it's Lewis who's the next oldest, and I'm older than Lewis.
And Lewis is much older than me. So there's a couple of F1 drivers buffer before.
He's about 6 months older than you.
Yep. Sure is.
It's all right. The very first thing that my wife said to me after all the fireworks had finished and New Year's was, "You're going to be 40 next year." I'm like, "Thanks, love."
Oh my goodness. Well, we best go do a big fun party to make you forget about that. Who do you think is going to come out on top? I know you don't like Alonso, but he's going to smash Stroll, isn't he?
Unless they do something horrific to him, it's going to be Fernando, based on just talent alone. It's going to be a case of, will Lance put up any form of fight or no fight at all? And I'm kind of straying towards the latter because I just don't think Lance has got any better. He's hit his peak and is now just leveled out. And he's now an acceptable F1 driver because he's had enough time.
Yes. And we are in furious agreement on this particular subject. Lance Stroll is an absolutely fine F1 driver now. Because anyone would be if you're just in it forever. if you just keep doing it. With no pressure to actually, or little pressure, less pressure than most people to actually get the results that the car is capable of, then you can, just keep going until you're good enough at it. Eventually, most people are going to get good at a thing.
It's like playing the same computer game over and over and over again. You've never played it before. You don't know the controls, so you're rubbish to start with. But you play it for hours and hours and hours and hours for years and years and years, and all of a sudden you're good. But unfortunately, everyone else is off doing something else.
But that said, obviously we understand if we jumped in a Formula One car, Lance Stroll would eat us alive by about 25 seconds of that. So who's next
Speak
up?
Speak for yourself.
Okay, obviously more for you. Alfa Romeo. Oh God, I said Haas was my meh team. Alfa Romeo is double meh. I just could not care. I do not care about Alfa Romeo. When they're Audi in a couple of years' time, and it's like a proper factory effort, I'll care more.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Alfa Romeo isn't even the engines they use, and
they're just milling about, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they beat Aston, they beat Haas, they beat AlphaTauri, they beat Williams.
Yeah.
They're not doing a bad job. So either they're actually pretty good driver pairing, and obviously the Ferrari engine being good, and maybe they are getting help from Ferrari and Sauber generally being a good outfit. Has, put them in there just below McLaren.
So, I like the drivers. Obviously, mm-hmm. Bottas, we know Bottas well, and we know his level.
A known quantity.
Yeah, we know Bottas he can be really fast. He can, he kind of pushed Lewis some of the time.
He's an amazing qualifier.
Over the course of their time together, obviously, I think Lewis had quite significantly had the beating of him, especially in race pace. But Bottas is fine. He's a decent driver, multiple race winner, etc. Joe has also impressed me this mm-hmm. season. I thought he was much closer to and ahead of frequently Bottas than I expected him to be. And yep. I think he's one of those drivers a little bit like Nyck de Vries, who's benefited from extra time in the junior series, mm-hmm. not being rushed through a junior program to kind of mature and, just... We've had for years and years, we've had this thing where if you're not in a Formula One car by the time you're 17, you're washed up, you're too old. If you're in your 20s and you're in Formula One, there's another kid on the way through. I think now, especially with the trickier type of cars we have now, mm-hmm. I think experience counts for a lot more. And I think having an extra couple of years is not a bad thing to build up your confidence and your experience and your engineering level in the junior series. So I think Joe is actually potentially going to beat Bottas this season.
I mean, I thought Joe was great last year. Definitely rookie of the year. Only rookie, but definitely rookie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't flying off the road. He wasn't making a lot of the rookie mistakes that we'd generally expect for somebody in a car like an Alfa Romeo. And was just solid. You know, the biggest crash he had was Silverstone, where Russell hoofed him off into the fence. And apart from that, he's been absolutely solid. And bearing in mind, we know Bottas is a good driver. You know, okay, he's not top tier. He had 5 years to prove that, and he's not top tier. But he's close enough to fight with him. And Joe's hung with him. And that's really, really impressive in a new formula. Cars that are tricky, you know, they're much harder to drive, these cars. They've got a lot less sort of downforce, and the low speed corner grip is much, much worse. And he's just handled it, you know. And one of the things we see from lots of rookies is they end up in the wall often. And I can't remember too many occasions where he's made many mistakes. So yeah. Solid. And I think, yeah, I still think Bottas will have the better of him. Because Bottas does have that level of quality, but I think Joe will give him a run for his money.
So I have to just acknowledge, and this won't mean anything to the guys on Twitter, we have had our first technical issue, and that is my cheapo Amazon ring light is flashing. I think somehow the LEDs are on the way out, and I've got like a disco going on in my simulator room. So I'm going to just turn that light around. I'm going to look a bit darker on the YouTube stream.
Considering the last few weeks, I'll take it.
If it looks like I'm, you know, flashing away in here, and it's like a strobe light, apologies. I can't reach the off button, so I actually can't disable it entirely. It's stuck down the back of the desk.
I see. If you're a good producer, you just put it onto me, and then you'd slightly move, and then come back.
Oh my god!
Once I next get talking,
Alex, tell us what you think about Bottas's chance this year.
So we've already talked about Bottas. We can actually move on to McLaren next, because somehow Alfa Romeo came after McLaren, just after McLaren. And this is the big one for me this year. So we have Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. We know Norris is world class. He's there to rub shoulders with the best in the business, and I genuinely believe that, and it's not because I'm a massive fan, and that he shared a photo with me over in some cafe.
Oh yeah, we should have had
over
that
at Ascot.
Make sure you send that to me so we can have that ready for next time. Yeah, Alex.
Next time we mention Lando Norris.
Alex was just in a cafe. This is how small the UK is for anyone watching or listening in America. Alex was just in a random cafe.
Having a meeting with a customer.
And Lando Norris was just there. He just sent us a photo.
I was sat and I was having a conversation with this guy. This guy knew nothing about Formula One. And I completely stopped listening to what he was talking about because I got distracted. And I keep looking over and he looked at me and went, "You're right." I went, "I think that's Lando Norris." He goes, "Who's Lando Norris?" And I put my head in my hands and I went, "Oh, just one of the top F1 drivers at the moment. Oh, I don't watch Formula One." I'm like, "Yeah, I realise that." And I paid no attention for the rest of the meeting. I finished the meeting. I got him to leave. And then I went over like an absolute geek as a 38-year-old man and asked this 20-something-year-old for an autograph. Well, for a photo. Don't do autographs anymore. But he was lovely. In that same week, we met Sergio Perez.
Yeah, we specifically went to an Indian restaurant that we thought maybe some people might be. And it wasn't because we're like massive fanboys that wanted to necessarily meet particular F1 drivers. We just had a hunch that maybe they'd go there and we wanted to kind of prove our suspicions right. And sure enough, we went to this Indian restaurant. My light's still flashing. I thought I'd fixed it. We went to this Indian restaurant and the owner was a bit more on edge than he should have been and was a bit more distracted, and Alex's Coke was flat and telling him that he didn't like the fact that
I had flat Coke.
Nope. And then...
I was wrong, apparently.
Lo and behold, Sergio Perez and all, half his engineering team all wander in and have their meal at the table behind us. So there we go. So we've done...
Norris and Piastri.
Sorry. I was trying to fix this light whilst you were talking about that. I wasn't listening at all. Oh, this is an exciting one, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, so we know Norris is a known quantity, so he's going to be amazing, as he has been every single year since he joined the sport. Now, I think for Oscar Piastri, because of the chaos that he caused, and I think chaos is the right word for when he unceremoniously told Alpine over Twitter
that he wasn't going to join them and he was going to join McLaren, even though he had a contract and Alpine were not expecting it in the slightest. And then the chaos that then ensued after it with wars of words between pretty much every single level of management in Formula One. He has to perform. I'm not giving him the rookie card that I normally give most rookies. You can't come in and try and put your foot down with that much authority and then not be at the top of your game straight away.
It was very ballsy and I loved it. It was awesome. I'm completely here for the drama.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know anything about the kid. I haven't really watched him race. I haven't really heard much of an interview with him, so I don't know if I like the way he talks and the way he sounds. So I have no opinions apart from you've got to perform, kid.
Okay. So I think he will be, despite way less experience, I think he will be much closer to Lando on a regular basis than Ricciardo was. Having said that, that's not difficult because the gulf that Ricciardo had was pretty significant at times. I think Lando will clearly still... I mean, Lando is top draw. So he would hold a candle to any driver. I think he could be Verstappen's teammate and Lando is one of the few drivers who would pretty much match him. That was an unintentional one. So I think anyone will struggle against Lando. Having said that, if Piastri does match him or get way closer than Ricciardo, he's going to look like a hero and the hype mm-hmm. will be justified. So I'm hoping that will happen. I think that team could be awesome.
And I have to talk about how much I miss Danny Ric. Danny is one of my favourite drivers. I think he's a lovely guy. And I watched the repeat of the Chinese Grand Prix in 2018, maybe. I can't remember what year it was, where there was a late safety car, him and Max. Max was ahead of him, both pitted onto new tyres. He had also had loads of issues in qualifying and in practice with engine modes. And he came through the field. Max messed it up twice. He went off the road trying to overtake Lewis and he hit Seb. And then with just some incredible moves, with incredible late braking, just took everybody. And even Bottas put up a rough defense and he got him in a really unique place. And that's Danny Ric, just doesn't disappear. So I hope, and we'll talk about this later when we get to Red Bull, but I hope he enjoys his year off and then comes back fighting.
So Danny Ric suited that previous generation of cars.
Correct.
I mean, we've had this conversation before, but I just don't know whether Danny Ric will ever get to grips with this generation. I know it's nice to have a year out and your motivation can come back, but I don't feel like he wasn't motivated. I feel like sometimes your style just doesn't gel with a particular style that's required for certain types of car. These cars are really specific and just maybe it was just beyond Danny to adapt to that, which is there's no shame in that, but I don't think he'll ever be back and be fast unless the cars change quite a lot in the way they need to be driven.
While we're talking about McLaren, let's talk about that pedal cam.
Yeah, okay.
Me and you have talked a lot about this. So ever since I've known you and been using your Sims, and the first time I ever got in any of your Sims, I'm like, God, your brake pedal is stiff. And you've always told me that that's what race car pedals, doesn't matter what race car you're in, they're always stiff because they're not servoed and it's the best way to get the best feel out of a brake. And
just to quickly explain that, humans, and I know you know this, humans are better at sensing and judging pressure, the amount of pressure that they are applying with their limbs to an object, than how far they're moving it. So if you were to give someone a blind test, where they had to describe how much pressure they've applied to a certain machine, you know, whatever you're testing, say it's a brake pedal, and accurately replicate that. So if you said, okay, apply a certain amount of pressure, okay, now do that again with the same amount, you'll find it's much more accurate than if you say, move this object in space, you know, if you say you can't see what you're moving, okay, now move it the same distance again. You'll find it's much more variation in the distance. And that's why brake pedals tend to be stiff in race cars because you're not trying to move. You're not trying to think of, okay, I need to move the pedal 3 centimeters. Mm-hmm. You're trying to think, I need to press it this hard. And you can do that more accurately and you know, replicate it better. So anyway, so that's the reasoning behind it. And you've yourself have experienced this because you've driven single seat race cars and prototypes like kind of mini Le Mans cars. And were the pedals really stiff?
Yep.
Okay.
Really, really stiff. And it's that case of, you know, I think they talk about with the F1 cars, you've got to put 120 kilos of pressure. Now, bearing in mind, most of the drivers weigh around 68 kilos. So that's nearly double their weight that they have to push down on the brake pedal. And apparently, if they were just sat stationary in the car, they couldn't do it. And they actually use the G-force and the deceleration to actually help add force.
I think there's a bit of hyperbole there because I think you definitely can replicate this. I'll give you a little tangential story on this in a moment. But okay, well, I was part of a Formula 3 scholarship competition a few years back called Race to Reality. It was run by the Carlin team. You know, you'll know Carlin from Formula 3 and Formula 2. And I got through to the grand final of this, and one of the assessments, what Carlin at their factory had a simulator which was specifically for training drivers to apply the brakes in the correct way. So it was literally like a racing simulator, except it didn't do anything other than have a screen in front of you with a series of graphics that would appear. And each time a graphic appeared, you had to press the brake pedal as if you were trying to slow the car down from a really high speed, say into a chicane at Monza, something like that. And you would do this, repeat it maybe 20 or 30 times, and then you'd look at your data afterwards and see what shape your brake trace was. And this is what, you know, I'm sure it's even better now. This was a few years ago now. And this is what their young drivers get to kind of practice on. And you definitely can apply the amount of kilos required. It is definitely easier, though, if you're already, if your body's being decelerated and your foot's being pressed into the pedal, but it doesn't add that much extra weight. But it'll only add, well, you can work it out. If your foot weighs a kilo, it'll only add, say it's 3G, it'll only add 3 kilos to the brake pedal. So it doesn't make that much difference, but it helps. We've gone well off on a tangent. The McLaren brake pedal.
So what we've seen from the cam box, the pedal cam box in the McLaren, is there seems to be a lot of play in that brake pedal. Like rubbish simulator pedals, kind of like a potentiometer pedal kind of play in the pedals, which shocked both of us when we first saw it. And from things that I've read and understood, maybe I've misunderstood, God knows what were the things I read, but my understanding is he didn't get on with that because everything he does is in the brakes, and obviously the brakes in that car are very different. But apparently that braking system is a hangover from when Alonso was at McLaren, and it's not something that they have managed to change. Ah, I remember where this came from. This came from my source inside Red Bull, and they had a guy from McLaren come over to Red Bull, and that's where that information came from. So it's really, really interesting that they employ that. Obviously, it's something that Lando has gelled with, and my understanding is it is something that Danny Ric struggled with. We'll never know for sure because he's actually been incredibly gracious since being unceremoniously dumped by the team. He's been incredibly gracious. He hasn't said a bad word about the McLaren outfit, and he really could have done. Even in that interview that he had a few weeks ago with Beyond the Grid, he didn't say a bad word about McLaren, did he?
Just to quickly touch on the brake thing one more time, just because I don't want to leave a geeky thing unfinished. I have a couple of hypotheses on why that pedal moves so far. So your view is from your Red Bull source that maybe it's a hangover from Alonso's time at McLaren. But I know the drivers are a big influential part of a team, but I don't think the engineers would just go, oh yeah, okay, we'll just have a floppy pedal. I think there's a few things. Maybe it looks worse than it is because you're really zoomed in. You know, you're very, very close to the pedal. So any movement is going to look a little bit bigger. I think also you can have a pedal with quite a bit of travel that is still stiff because it's just not really doing anything initially. So the pedal comes up a long way. It moves quite far, but the only bit that actually has stiffness is at the bottom. So it doesn't really do much until your foot gets further down in the travel. And the bottom bit of the travel is really firm. unlike a road car brake, where you've got your servo assistance and you can gently brake in your road car. You can kind of brake with your toes and the car will still slow down quite a lot. If you try to do that in a single seater, nothing will happen. Even if you if you brake pretty hard in a single seater, nothing will happen. You have to brake really hard and then a lot happens. But yeah, anyway, whatever the reasons Danny Rick didn't get on. Why are we even talking about Danny Rick? He's not one of the drivers.
Because I love him and I miss him.
I know you do. Alex spent some time with Daniel Ricciardo at the Race of Champions.
I did.
So let's move on to the next team. So I guess that's Alpine.
It is.
So we're moving up the grid now. I'm just
the French team with
history.
The French team with the two French drivers.
Oh yeah. So two of my favourite drivers because
really,
yeah, I really like Pierre Gasly.
Okay.
And apologies, Twitter. I just remembered there's no mute, so when I just cough, you just hear it. Okay, sorry. I have to work that out. I have to like simultaneously press mute on both devices in future. Yeah, I really like Gasly. I just think he's cool, and I feel so bad for him for what happened at Red Bull when he was thrown in, and it just didn't work out at all. Yeah, I just really like Pierre, and I like Ocon too.
You just
too.
Fancy him.
Gasly's one of the best looking drivers for sure. I think. I mean, yeah.
Pierre Gasly.
I loved when he won as well at Monza.
I wanted Carlos to win.
That was one of my favourite things that ever happened in Formula One. And Ocon.
Really?
I really like Ocon too because, oh yeah, man, I was out of my seat like cheering when Gasly won. I was so happy. Ocon I really like because I like his origin story. I like that he's too tall to be a Formula One driver, but he's there anyway.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Taller than Russell. I think he might be.
I think he's as tall.
They're certainly very similar.
Google it now.
Also, he came from, you know, humble beginnings, which is unusual nowadays. I just really like that. And he did well against Alonso this year. I know Alonso lost a lot of points, yada, yada, yada. But I think Ocon on balance was also pretty good. So I hope there's not too many fireworks there. I know they've had their issues between each other in the past. Whatever. They're driving for a French Formula One team. It's got to be a dream to be a French driver driving for a decent F1 team. It's also French. And even though it's based in Enstone, which is a lovely place in the Cotswolds, by the way.
There is 0.01 meter difference between George and Ocon in the favour of Ocon.
Okay. So, I mean, they're both too tall to be Formula One drivers.
Full chat coming at you with all the facts that you really, really want to know.
I think, I was going to say, I thought we talked about F1 driver heights before, but that was on Quickstop. Nice. That was on Quickstop F1. I had that chat. So who's going to come out on top? You'd say Ocon's the one that's the incumbent. He's got more experience with the team. He should come out on top, shouldn't he? I think they're both a very similar level of driver in terms of their ultimate performance.
I think, as does... Who did it in our chat? Low Stealth said it in our chat, that Ocon Gasly is going to be way more interesting than K-Mag and Hulk. And I totally and utterly agree, because there is a lot of history, apparently, between these two. Apparently, they don't get on, or didn't get on. They've obviously been smiling a lot for the cameras. But when it comes to fighting for maybe podiums, this car, it's getting better and better. There's nothing to say that they won't be nipping at the heels, maybe, of the Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull set. Will they take lumps out of each other. Absolutely. And I can't wait. I think it's going to be down to the reliability of that car again. But I do think over the course of a season, I think Ocon's the better driver.
So we did hear that Renault/Alpine they've kind of located the cause of some of their major unreliability in 2022.
Good.
Pointed towards a fuel pump issue, which they think they've got rectified. So maybe that'll be resolved. And
I hate seeing retirements. Honestly, the more reliable F1 has been, the more and more I've enjoyed it. Because you don't sit there for 20 laps and you're waiting for your favourite driver's car to break down. So I think improved reliability has been a great thing, which is another reason I don't like why we have so few gearboxes and why we have so few engines. Because when it gets to the end of the season, that all ramps up.
So I think this has been really good so far, like kind of revision on the upcoming season, because we've got so far some really good intra-team battles. There's some really good storylines, regardless of what the outright performance of each car is. These teammate battles are going to be really interesting to watch. So this is good.
Apart from Lance Stroll, I mean, and as I said, he's kind of been in it long enough now that he's made it worth it. Even with the rookies coming in, I don't think there's anybody coming in who I'm like, nah, they shouldn't be in Formula One.
Yeah.
Which, it's been a long time since I felt that.
Yeah, we've got some people who are certainly greasing the wheels of their F1 entry with some backing, but nothing like the level of pay driver that we're used to from the recent past. So that's good. Definitely good. Formula One is becoming you'd hope that the pinnacle of motorsport is like elite and that everyone there is there on merit, but that definitely has never really been the case. So I think we're much closer to that than we have been in the past. Okay, I didn't really give my full views. I think Ocon's going to come out on top. I think Gasly will be the faster over a lap once he's used to the car.
Fair enough.
So next up.
This is what the chat's been waiting for, isn't it?
So we're up to the top three.
We're up to Lewis and George.
Okay, so.
Mercedes. I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Okay. I've probably explained myself about Lewis and George quite a few times. They are statistically, in terms of qualifying pace, the most evenly matched pairing on the grid, which means they're both really good because both of them are fast. So to match the other one, they're doing really, really well. It shows they're both getting pretty much the maximum out of that car all the time as well, even though it was a bit of a pig last year. Oh, it's nice to say last year, isn't it? I'm so glad. I'm so glad we've moved on to a new year.
Last year, next season, this year, that year.
I think of all the teams, all the front-running teams, the Mercedes drivers are the ones most likely to ruin each other's championships by taking points off each other. Mm-hmm. I think they're so evenly matched that you won't have a situation where one of them is always getting the upper hand and scoring the bigger points. It's going to be sometimes it's George ahead, sometimes it's Lewis ahead, and they're going to just, unless they are the dominant car, which is probably unlikely based on where they came from last year, I think they are going to suffer. As a team, they'll do really well in the Constructors' Championship. I think neither of them will win the Drivers' Championship, unfortunately, because they will just be too close. And we saw, I know it was different because they were out of the championship hunt, but Brazil, Mercedes were still letting them race. You know, even when it was really important for Mercedes to get that 1-2 result, they still let them race. They could have crashed, you know, if they got a bit closer to each other. Could have easily happened. So that's my view on these two.
I saw a snippet from Peter Windsor recently where he said that if he was running Mercedes, he would rip up George Russell's contract and say, I will write you another contract, but you will never finish ahead of Lewis Hamilton.
Ooh,
wow. And I understand that because I'm 90% certain, not that he's got an opportunity to, but I'm 90% certain there is something to that ilk in Sergio Perez's contract, because I agree with you on that front. I think it's going to be super close between George and Lewis. I think if the car hits the ground running, I do think Lewis will have the better of George. Maybe not in qualifying, but in race and looking after tyres and general management. But I agree with you on the fact that they will probably take points off of each other. What I could see happening, though, is if the Mercedes is as good as the Red Bull, I can see Lewis and Max murdering each other at 80% of the races and George picking up the pieces, which I think is highly likely. So George could win the championship purely because this vendetta between Lewis and Max isn't over.
Yeah, wow, I forgot about that. Okay, yes, I agree. I think if George and Lewis are super close as they were last season, anytime there's an opportunity for Max and Lewis to come together, they will, and that will be the deciding factor. I mean, it may well have been the deciding factor at Brazil. You know, Lewis may well have won that Brazil race without having to come back. I know he was helped out by the safety car, wasn't he, later on, but yeah. Anyway, I don't know if it's 2JZ Lexus or 2JZ, built 2JZ Lexus. Is that a type of engine, 2JZ? Anyway, in the chat, he says, or she says, Mercedes and Lewis have done fine for years with very minimal team orders. People are overblowing it. They will take points off each other and Max. So there we go. That's their opinion. Oh, might be
the,
right.
The problem is yes, they've done very well. They've helped F1 over their domination years by letting their drivers race. How boring would it have been if it was Max and Perez in the position that Mercedes were in for the last 7 years?
Yes. So I know we're not quite at Red Bull yet, but yeah, I've got reasonably firm opinions on that. Should we move away from our beloved Mercedes and go to Ferrari?
Yes, let's go to the team that was lucky to hold on to second place in the championship, if I'm brutally honest.
Yes.
I mean, I love this driver pairing as well. I think I like both Charles and Carlos. I think it's really clear that that Leclerc is the faster driver, but Carlos is a great, you know, rear gunner. You know, and he'd hate to be called a rear gunner, but he's not going to beat Charles. But it's the outfit. The outfit just has to stop shooting itself in the foot. Maybe Fred Vasseur coming in will snap that out of them, but Ferrari have got to stop Ferrarying themselves.
I mean, at least they've got stable management platform moving forward. Oh no, everything's been ripped up. Oh no. Yeah, so this is just
same
Ferrari.
Goes for a couple of other teams, though. We've had the biggest merry-go-round of team management that we've ever had.
Yes, you're right. We've covered that before, but obviously Ferrari are kind of the worst at this. They're the team that follow the football, soccer, management technique where if someone's not doing particularly well for a little while, you just sack them and get a new manager. And yeah, Ferrari have had a bit of stability over recent years, but yeah, straight out the door now, even though the team came second and it was a big improvement over previous seasons. Yeah, I think Fred Vasseur's going to be good, but from everything I've heard, he's got even less power than Binotto had. He's kind of just a manager, doesn't have that much oversight, and there are kind of higher powers at work that want too much involvement on the ground level, and that's never going to be good.
But do you know what? If it means he is just team principal and his only role is making sure that team runs well, then that's hopefully a good thing. But the biggest thing Ferrari had last year was indecisiveness. I mean, and the biggest examples of that were Silverstone and France, where they did not know what to do.
Stop inventing.
Strategy.
Stop
inventing. And Carlos is side by side with Perez into the final section of the final section of the lap, and they're calling him in. What are you doing? He had to back out to go because he was on the inside. He had to back out to let Perez go to pit. It was dumb. And I just think a lot of other teams, the team we are coming to next, are just so much more slick when it comes to strategy.
So in terms of the drivers, I like them both. Really like Leclerc. Oh, I feel like he's destined to never get a championship though. I feel like either he or that whatever team he's with will conspire to not give him a chance at the championship. He looks so nailed on after the first few races in 2022, but
having said that, if you're Mercedes, you're going to sign this new deal with Lewis Hamilton for a couple of years. Who'd you get coming in straight after Lewis Hamilton?
100%.
Charles Leclerc, without a shadow of a doubt. Charles Leclerc or Lando? Or both?
I think Lando will be at Audi. I think he'll follow Andrea Seidel across to Audi and lead that team.
And that's interesting. I think
you're right. I think we will see Charles at Mercedes. I hope we do. And I hope Mercedes is still strong when he goes there.
Yeah, because I don't like cheering for Ferrari, and I've had to cheer for Ferrari part of the season.
Oh, no, I've not really thought about that, but I feel the same. I really want to cheer on Leclerc, but I just don't really like Ferrari very much. Carlos Sainz, again, isn't a real number two. He's too good to be a number two, but he's also...
He's a 1.5.
Yeah, he's not quite the number one either. That's quite a simple one, isn't it? We've got a conspiracy theory in the chat. I think ever since Monaco Gate, I don't think Sergio has been allowed to challenge Max. And since Brazil and Red Bull had a chance to stamp their authority, and not to be rude, but they bent over to Max. So you can watch all about how Perez crashed deliberately at Monaco on my YouTube channel. Just have a look. It was a video that did quite well because lots of people love that kind of stuff. But that's not a conspiracy theory. We've got hard evidence there, and you can see what you think yourself.
I agree with Connor. I think that they have been conspiring against Perez, but I think they've been conspiring against Perez since the beginning of the season when they realised that Perez just isn't fast enough to attack Max. I'm sorry.
It's a double whammy, isn't it?
There is absolutely nothing that Perez could have done to win the championship. Even if he had had absolute equal treatment, there's been lots of conversation about, has he had the right car? Has he had the same car? Has he not? I have information on that one, which I can get to in a sec. At the end of the day, Sergio Perez is nowhere near, not even close, not even in the same echelon as good as Max Verstappen. And this is coming from someone who does not like Max Verstappen, but I do, like with Fernando Alonso, I appreciate how good the guy is. And Perez isn't that level. Perez's job is to bring home the constructor title. To defend Max and bring home the constructor title. Whether Perez likes it or not, that's his job. He's the Rubens Barrichello to Max's Michael Schumacher. And that is it.
I don't think I've ever in Formula One, in all my many, many years of watching Formula One, seen a teammate as subservient to his number one driver as Perez has been at Red Bull. I've never seen someone act so grateful to be given the chance to be in a car which occasionally gives you a chance to be on the podium or win a race occasionally as Perez. And it's almost like this is going to sound awful from someone who isn't a Formula One driver and is nowhere near there, but it's almost embarrassing to see that, because you get used to Formula One drivers, even if ultimately they aren't the quickest and maybe they know it deep down, they always kind of exude this air of supreme confidence and, you know, in equal conditions, yeah, I can beat anyone. Perez just seems to have accepted how far off he is, and he's really far off Max. And I know Max is awesome in terms of pace. He's really exceptionally fast, but he's not a god. There are other Formula One drivers who can match Max for pace. I feel like Perez has just accepted his role as being way slower. And if the Red Bull wasn't so far ahead in terms of pace this year, towards the second half of the season at least, then Perez could have been, he could have had many drivers between him and Max in the standings. You know, he was so far away from Max's points tally in the same car that if other teams were a bit closer, Perez would be embarrassingly far down the order.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about it all, you say he was gracious, grateful, because he was. Because until he won the race at the end of 2020... he was out. He wasn't going to be in Formula One. He won that race, and all of a sudden, he gets signed to Red Bull. They saved his career. He'd be sitting on the sideline still if it wasn't for Red Bull. And he now has to watch himself very, very closely because of Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel Ricciardo is now the third driver, test, reserve, and social media-y person.
Promo driver. He's going to go do donuts in car parks for a year.
Exactly. But it is no secret that Red Bull love Daniel Ricciardo. They were wounded when he left. They did not want him to go. And I think they are happy to have him back. He looked very, very happy to have taken that position with them, despite the fact of being offered a Haas seat, despite the fact of being in conversation with Mercedes for a similar role that he now has at Red Bull. And if Perez gets to halfway through the season and is doing as poorly as he did the second half of last season, he's gone. And so I think Daniel Ricciardo will come into that seat.
the luxury Red Bull have in this respect is nobody really, unless they go for one of the, you know, the very top guys that we've spoken about, and we know they're not going to go for them. Anyone else that they put in that seat isn't going to beat Max anyway. So it doesn't matter. You can put pretty much anyone else in that seat that you want, and you don't really have to worry that, oh, we're going to take points off each other. No, he's still going to finish behind Max, even if he does a brilliant job, but it'll be closer. And I think you're right. If Perez is in a situation where he is hemorrhaging Constructors' Championship points, I don't think they care that much, because Red Bull very much care more about just getting Max to another title. That's a sexy title, isn't it? No one really cares about Constructors. But yeah, I think they've got the chance, even if it's just to put pressure on Perez, that, you know, having Ricciardo waiting in the wings. I still don't think he's coming back, though.
I think with regards to that conversation, what you said about Max and no one's challenging him, I think there's only four drivers on the grid that could think about getting close to him. Lewis, obviously, Charles Leclerc, Max and George. Lando and George.
Agreed,
and
by the way.
I put George at the back of that list. I probably will put him further up after this season. I mean, I've spent the last however many years since he joined Williams saying that George Russell is the future, and I still believe it. But I also believe it about Lando Norris too. Charles Leclerc needs something to kick him up the arse quickly, and he needs to stop making the mistakes, because he makes the most mistakes out of those four. Lewis, we all know, couldn't go toe-to-toe with Max, no problem at all. But apart from that, there is nobody else close on this grid. Even Fernando Alonso, I think, in that kind of intense battle throughout the season, I do think the age would wane on him, and the politics and the way a team runs would mean Fernando just mentally, I don't think, could handle it.
So we're over an hour into the show. So this is going to be our longest show, but that's okay. We can run a bit longer, because we started much earlier than normal as well. Mm-hmm. Before we end our 2023 driver...
Oh, God, we've been talking about this for an hour.
Yeah. This is good, though. This is a good subject to talk about.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the title? Let's wrap up with who's going to be first, who's going to be last?
Who do I want, or who do I think?
Who do you think?
God. It all depends on that W for 14, but I still think it's going to be a Max season, and you have no idea how much, yes, you do. You know how much it hurts me to say that, but they were really far ahead at the end of last season. They won pretty much every single race towards the end of the season, after the summer break. And yeah.
Wait, but they're being penalized heavily for their overspending.
Yeah, my contact in the aero team at Red Bull also said it's not going to make a slight bit of difference. It might hurt them a little bit with development at the end of the season.
So yeah, I think we all kind of knew that. My prediction. Oh, who's going to come last? By the way,
last.
Yeah,
Williams.
No, unfortunately. Which driver? It's going to be Sargeant, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Albon will get the couple of points that they need.
Yeah. Okay. So my predictions are, I think George Russell, if the W14 is any good, George Russell's going to win the championship. And I'm saying that because Lewis to win. So if Lewis wins, I'll be happy because he's the one I want to win. And if Russell wins, at least I was right. So
I believe if George wins, it'll be because of the scenario that I mentioned before, which is it'll be Lewis and Max running into each other. And I think this season will play a lot on what Lewis does next, because if every single time he gets anywhere near Max, Max just keeps running him off the circuit, is he going to want to just deal with that? You know, it's a shame, because my whole theory for the season just gone was before the W12 came out as a dog, or the W13 came out as a dog, was that let George keep running into Max so Lewis can win the title.
Yeah.
In case if I was Toto, I would have said to George, do not pull out from any move with Max Verstappen. If Max wants to hit you, let him hit you. because then when Lewis gets his eighth title, decides to disappear off because he's got number eight, and that's a good enough number, thank you very much. For the following season, Max will know you aren't going to back out.
So I think we learned, didn't we? If we weren't sure, I think we learned for sure this year at Brazil that the Max has issues when he's racing with Lewis because he decides to. The reason he doesn't crash with most other drivers is because he doesn't have to. He's a skilled enough driver that he does understand the dynamics, and he understands what happens when he puts his car at certain speeds and certain positions, and he just makes different decisions when he's around us. So anyway, there we go. That's our season preview. However, the juicy bit of this episode is the thing I really wanted to talk about, and I haven't
for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about this for ages. I've labeled my buttons incorrectly, so I hope the right image pops up. But this is the curious case of Luca Badoa when he got his Ferrari chance. So those of you who are new Formula One fans definitely won't know this story, I imagine, because it's a real obscure side tale. It's a little side quest in the Formula One viewership over the years.
I'll keep an eye on the list, on the listeners in the Twitter and the viewers on the YouTube to see how it goes.
It's going to drop, isn't it?
It is a really interesting story. So please listen to the story because it's really good.
If Alex and I get this wrong or miss details,
which is likely,
please feel free to fill in. But if you want to chip in, Alex, feel free, because I'm just going to like offload everything I can remember. But the year is 2009. Braun GP were romping to the championship and Red Bull were catching them towards the end. But ultimately, Jenson Button was going on to win for Braun. But in the background were Ferrari, who were still reeling from not quite winning the championship in 2008, where Massa lost it at the final lap at Brazil when Hamilton overtook Glock. Anyway, that was the previous season. So we're one season on from Hamilton's first championship. And Felipe Massa suffered the misfortune of driving into a spring which had fallen off the back of Rubens Barrichello's Braun.
Horrific.
Big, chunky, heavy spring.
I've held one of those springs, and I wouldn't have wanted it thrown at me gently from a meter away. And yes, the fact that he came bouncing across the road at 90 miles an hour is horrifying, and he's a lucky, lucky boy.
So at the Hungarian Grand Prix, Massa encountered this spring, super unlucky, no head protection other than your helmet, and fortunately, the spring hit the top of his visor, not in the middle of his visor, and there was enough structure to the helmet that Massa survived, but was knocked unconscious, crashed into the barrier. He was out for the rest of the season. So Massa was off with a fractured skull.
We didn't know if he was ever coming back.
No. So Massa out. So Ferrari need a replacement driver to partner Kimi Raikkonen. Now, the problem they had was they had a few drivers they could have put in. There were up-and-coming drivers, GP2, so the previous Formula 2 drivers that they could have slotted
in. GP2 driver.
They had a couple of test drivers, Marc Genet, but a driver that had been on Ferrari's books for a number of years was their test driver, Luca Badoa. And just to give you a bit of a background on who Luca Badoa was, he won the equivalent to Formula 2, which was Formula 3000 at the time, back in 1992, if I'm not mistaken. So a long time before 2009, which is when this story takes place. So he was a good junior driver a long, long time before, almost two decades before. And he'd raced in Formula One in the mid-90s, famously nearly scored a point for Minardi, I believe, at the Nürburgring, the European Grand Prix, and was running in sixth. That's been back when points only went down to sixth, but his car conked out 11 laps from the end. Anyway, so he was good, you know, he was good in his prime. Definitely a driver that could have done absolutely fine. You know, he was as good as pretty much any of the, certainly midfield drivers in the mid-90s. Go on, Alex, go on.
One point that I wanted to mention that Kyle's just reminded me of in the chat, which was, so obviously the crash for Massa happened at Hungary. So it was the race before the summer break. So they had a bit of time to do this. And the person they wanted to get in was Michael Schumacher. But Michael Schumacher, the previous year or in that year, had a motorcycle accident and had a fracture in his neck and was not fit enough to actually race for them that season. And it's part of the thing that gave him the impetus to come back in 2010.
Absolutely, yeah. See, this is why I love having the chat. They fill us in with like extra interesting nuggets. So the driver that Ferrari chose was Luca Badoa, kind of to say thank you for being such a good long-standing test driver. Yep. Now, Badoa was, at this point, very much towards the very end of his driving career, let alone racing career. And at the point Ferrari chose to put him in the car in 2009, he hadn't raced a car in a decade. 10 years was the last time that he'd raced a Formula One car. And in that time, a lot of things had changed. But he was never going to say no. As an Italian driver driving for Ferrari, even midway through the season, in a car he had never driven before. The last Ferrari he'd driven, even in testing, was the year before's car at Portimao, back when Formula One didn't race there. And that's because there was a testing restriction. Testing ban had come in mid-season. So there was no opportunity for him to get up to speed. So what looked to be a really bad performance when he had his first shot at Valencia, the street track which is no more, was actually, in hindsight, I think, pretty good. So Badoa came in. He was about 3 seconds off the pace, 2.5 seconds off of Raikkonen in practice or qualifying at Valencia. Sorry, Alex, go on.
The thing to also remember, this year's for the 2009 Ferrari was not a good car. It wasn't as bad as the McLaren was, but because McLaren and Ferrari had been so embroiled in the 2008 duel, they hadn't focused as much on the new regulations for 2009, and both teams had slipped down the order. So it was not an easy car to drive, but it was also a car that Raikkonen had had lots of input in developing and testing and was eventually settled in the car. So it does have to be given the fact that it was a difficult car to drive as well.
Yes, this isn't we're not talking about jumping into a dominant car. We're talking about jumping into a car, the equivalent, midfield. I get, the equivalent of the 2022 Mercedes, basically, you know, in terms of the pecking
order. No, it was worse than that. It got better towards the end. Yeah, by the time it got to Spa, when Kimi won in Spa, it was better, but it struggled massively at the beginning part of the year. Not as bad as the McLaren, but the Kers is what helped them.
So Badoa in Valencia qualified last, a couple of seconds off the pace, but didn't put it in the wall. And Lewis Hamilton actually commented after the sessions that it was impressive that he was managing mm-hmm. to, you know, get used to the tyres enough to keep it out of the wall, basically.
Because Lewis gave him praise.
It's basically a tough thing. It's difficult to drive Formula One cars.
The drivers gave him praise, actually. Sorry, Brad, I didn't mean to cut over you. Yeah, all the drivers gave him praise about jumping in, having not raced a Formula One car, you know, in a very long time. They all gave him props for it.
But he was dead last. Slow. He was at the back. At the beginning of the race, his first race back in a decade, he made up, I think, 6 or 7 places on lap one and was actually doing respectably well, which is tough to do on a street circuit, a tricky little twisty track in a car that's not the best. And then Romain Grosjean spun him round and I think he limped home last or second to last. It was, you know, not where a Ferrari should be, but it wasn't too bad. So Ferrari kind of allowed him to continue at the next race, which was Spa. And at Spa, that's where I remember Martin Brundle referring to him as not Luca Badoa, but look how bad you are. And I found that hilarious at the time. But in hindsight, the poor guy was in an impossible situation. You've got no testing, very limited practice. All you're trying to do is not crash. And you've got new tyres to get used to, a totally new car, a new track at Valencia for him. He will have obviously known Spa, but not recently. Now, this is a guy who had his prime career in the mid-90s, and we're talking about the end of the first decade of the 2000s. So it's been such a long time since he was, you know, really in peak F1 condition and ready to go. Anyway, he spun in first qualifying and qualified dead last, and then in the race kind of limped home last of the finishers. Although, as a couple of people have pointed out in the chat, he did set the fastest sector one of the race.
Whoop, whoop.
He got a purple sector one, but sector one at Spa is just basically flat out. So you just have to do one corner and then it just keep your foot down.
A bit of slipstream and Kers, they were one of the very few cars to have Kers.
And if you're at the back, you get a lot of slipstream. So he will definitely have benefited from Kers.
Who else had Kers that year? McLaren had Kers, Ferrari had Kers. Braun famously didn't. Red Bull did, but it kept dying.
They always
had an issue with Kers. Force India definitely didn't have it. That's part of the reason Kimi Raikkonen won the race. or the reason Kimi Raikkonen won the race. God, what are the teams? I can't remember.
So I don't remember.
The chat will fill us in on that one.
I don't remember who had or didn't have Kurz. But yes, you have touched upon Force India nearly winning the race. So Badoer was then replaced for the rest of the season, partly because of the negative media coverage, which now, again, seems really sad because although the results look terrible, he was improving. And I know for a fact how hard it is to get close to drivers who are used to a series, particularly a single-seater series. And you do get close. You know, Badoer wasn't a bad driver. He was just pretty old, as Formula One drivers go, and hadn't done it for ages. So he just needed a little bit more time to get into it. Anyway, Fisichella, who had done a brilliant job for Force India at Spa, was he on pole and then came second in the race to Raikkonen?
And he only came second because there was a safety car, and then with the help of Kurz, Kimi out-dragged him up to Lacombe.
So Fisichella did a brilliant job in a midfield car at Spa. Yeah. Force India / Jordan / Midland / Spyker / Racing Point / Aston Martin, that's all the same team, have always historically gone well at Spa. But anyway, Fisichella did a great job. Ferrari decided to put him, he was an Italian driver, decided to promote him to the Ferrari seat for the rest of the season, and he also scored no points. So Badoer's job didn't actually look that bad. In hindsight, but that was it. That was the end of his chance. But the curious tale of Luca Badoer, and it was interesting kind of researching that for this episode, because I vaguely remembered it, and I remembered him being like 10 seconds off the pace, but that's clearly a false memory. That's just how it felt at the time. Because in Formula One, really, if you're 3 seconds off, you might as well be 10 seconds off.
You might as well, exactly. I just remember him being awful, and I'm like, I don't think I really knew who he was. I think I'd heard of him, knew he was a test driver, but knew nothing about his past. And I was just like, God, there has to be something wrong if you're that far off, or you're just rubbish.
And now I think he actually did a really decent job, because he was probably our age or older. But there we go. That was history with Alex and Brad.
Have you not seen Connor's comment in the chat?
Bad and older. Luca, bad and older. Yeah, I mean, yeah, poor guy. Anyway, Alex, we've been on for nearly an hour and a half, which is way, way more than we would normally do. And there's no wood here, really, but touch carbon fibre. We've only suffered very minor technical issues. I can list them. My light flickered. I forgot to unmute myself for a few seconds. If we can keep it like that for the rest of the year, and we are planning on not having pod fade. We're not a podcast yet, but we will be. This is our first episode I've actually recorded, and I will be uploading these to a podcatcher service once I figure out how that works. So if you guys have listened to this one, there's no point listening back to that one. But maybe in the future, if you're out in the car and you don't have time to catch us live, look for full chat on Apple Podcasts or Acast or whatever else you use.
It's funny, whenever I've been on a podcast, I've always listened to it. And if I've ever watched anything live like this, and that I've been heavily involved in the chat, like our chat has been crazy today, I always go and listen back, because you're so busy chatting away other things that you sometimes miss other stuff, especially when we've been on things like Missed Apex, when Matt will go off on a tangent for half an hour on tyres, and I'll talk to the Slack group. I think it's always good to go back and listen. But if you guys want this to be a podcast, I think we're probably going to do it. We were talking about it before the beginning of this show as a case of whether this one would be a good one to be the first one, or we start it at the beginning of the season.
And by good one, you mean it doesn't just go completely to shit and everything stops working.
We don't just sit there and instantly talk about, why are we losing frames and why is it all laggy?
Why can't you hear Brad? Oh, Brad's too loud. Oh, Alex's picture's flickering, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so yeah, we've got through that, and hopefully, it's going to be like that for the future. So I've got some final things on my little notes to wrap up. Thanks to everyone in the chat, by the way. Thanks for everyone who's interacted. Thanks to the Twitter space for sitting with us and us basically just ignoring you. Remember, if you do want to interact in future or go back and watch and see what we look like in some of my little graphics that we put up, go and search for Full Chat or Brad Philpott on YouTube, or click the link in my bio or at the top of my Twitter page. So final things to wrap up. Remember to follow Alex Van Gene on Twitter at Alex Van Gene, and on TikTok, because he thinks he's 14. What's your TikTok handle?
It's for everything on the socials for me, be it be it Instagram, be it Twitter, be it TikTok, be it YouTube, is all at Alex Van Geen. I make it very simple because I'm the only one. I did a good video the other day of the alternate commentary from Brazil 08, where Crofty and Jonathan Ledyard absolutely missed Glock. And not until their timing screens told them that Lewis Hamilton was in fifth that they thought Massa had won the championship. And unfortunately, it ended up being a lot of hate against Crofty, and I love Crofty.
Yeah, it's quite funny actually listening back to that. I hadn't heard that until I watched your TikTok video. And Crofty's like, and Felipe Massa is the world champion. Oh no, no, it's Lewis Hamilton. It's really funny.
I guess they just completely forgot who was ahead of Lewis. And coming into the last corner, why would you also be overtaking somebody? But they just hadn't been watching it. And it was only because Martin Brundle who noticed Glock. Who was doing the commentary with Martin?
Jonathan Ledyard?
No.
No?
The other guy. Ted, not Ted.
Are you sure?
It was Jonathan. Jonathan Ledyard was with Crofty.
Okay.
Who was with Martin? Who was it? Oh, James Allen.
Oh, okay, yep.
James Allen. James Allen didn't notice it. It was Martin Brundle who just saw the red and white Toyota, you know, the bright red and white Toyota of Timo Glock. So
go and follow Alex on his channels. And Alex, just before I leave you, you've been doing some simulator car livery editing, and I'm sure you want to promote that.
Basically, I really enjoy messing around on Photoshop and painting pretend race cars. I did a couple of free ones for a bunch of people on Reddit. And people really like them. So I'm starting to do a few more. I've got four on the go at the moment with people wanting to do it. So it's Project 4 Designs. Just hit me up on any of the socials and we can talk about it. If you do iRacing and you want a nice livery done.
And remember to follow me at Bradley Philpott on Twitter. And obviously subscribe to this YouTube channel. If you're listening on Twitter, go to the YouTube channel, subscribe, even if you then never go there again. And until next week, remember to live life at full chat. No, wait, that's terrible. So someone send us a good version of like an outro thing that we can say.
Wounds heal.
No, everyone thinks... don't do that one. I was trying to think of something good and I just fully failed. But we'll see you next time, guys. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.